Get along, little doggy.
Hi, guys. I keep looking behind me, looking for cacti. I think I hear this. I go, there should be cacti near me.
There's a tumbleweed.
Bill and it's Wendy. Hi, guys. Welcome to the show. Remember yesterday we had Brett Gelman on. Brett Gelman is one of the stars of Fleabag. And I said to Brett Gelman, one of the stars of Fleabag, you know what's great about Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the girl who plays Fleabag, is with a quick glance, she can say so much. I know you haven't seen the show, Wendy, but she is a master at doing this take to the camera where there are no words. It's just a quick raise of an eyebrow. It's just a quick look, and you totally can read her. Steve Bertrand just did that in the news. He was talking about the Cubs and the playoff hopes, and he said they still have their playoff hopes. And then much like Fleabag, Steve said, barely. And I went, oh, Steve's our local Fleabag. I mean that as a compliment. That's such a compliment.
Thank you so much,
you're
Bill.
Welcome,
I appreciate
Steve.
That.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I work on that.
So it's still a possibility for the Cubs, right?
The Cubs would have to win all five of their remaining games. The Brewers would have to lose all five of their remaining games. And then there'd be a one-game playoff that the Cubs would have to win to get a one-game playoff with Washington.
A lot has to happen. It could happen.
No, it couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then why do you report that it could?
Well, I mean, technically, mathematically, it could.
Yeah.
You never know.
No, I know.
We know.
Yeah.
We know. We've already been given the list.
What about the White Sox?
Not this year for sure, Wendy. You can be very optimistic about the White Sox, but I don't think it's going to happen this year.
I feel it for next year. It's in my bones.
That'd be all right. That would be okay. There is much going on, and we will discuss not all of it. We were only on for two regular hours and one bonus hour. But, Paul, you can't discuss all of it
two
in that
time. Two regular hours and one highly irregular hour.
Sponsored by Metamucil. Paul Liznick, our friend Paul Liznick, will be by to explain to us what's going on in the news because things is crazy.
I don't know what is what. I don't know how Bill Clinton was impeached and didn't leave office. I know this has been explained to me 10 times. Mm-hmm. I still don't get it. Paul, I saw all over the WGN news last night. I still don't get it. We got to talk and figure all this out.
Well, just quickly, the House impeaches, the Senate convicts. So Clinton was impeached.
So is that like an indictment, kind of like
like a charge? There are charges of impeachment, and then it goes to the Senate to try him. And there was a trial in the Senate for Bill Clinton, and he was not convicted.
So he is always. Whenever you look at the legacy of Bill Clinton, he was impeached technically,
right.
But he was not forced out of office.
So everybody forgets that. I'm sorry.
No, they don't. I mean, maybe you do, Wendy.
I didn't forget it, but it's just confusing to me.
So do you ask this because you foresee that happening in a similar way to our current president? Is that why?
I don't think he's leaving office.
Do you think he will go step by step? The first part is the impeachment. Do you think that will happen?
Bill, I got to tell you, I don't know what to think anymore. I thought it was impeachment proceedings were going to happen before.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi was hesitant to bring them forth.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel like there must be some pretty great evidence in order to bring these proceedings forward.
Right.
But we don't know exactly yet.
Right.
Will we? It's all like am I dreaming?
No, this is real life. All right. There's much to discuss. And when Paul Liznick is on, I hope he will clarify some of it. Steve, I'm still baffled exactly on yesterday. The president said that the transcripts would be released today, but that's not fully true, is it? Or is it?
Well, everyone's calling it a transcript. It's actually a memorandum on the conversation. So
does a transcript exist of this conversation, or is it just notes that were taken by people who were in the room?
It's a good question. I don't think that there is a verbatim transcript. It's called a memorandum of a telephone conversation. It's a document at the records, notes, recollections of the Situation Room duty officers and other staff who were listening in on the call. So they're listening in, and then they recreate it. Now, what's confusing is it was released as if it is a transcript. I mean, it's released by President Trump says, President Zelensky says, mm-hmm. You know, like you're reading a script, a movie script or something like that.
And so, you've read some of it, but not all of it, correct?
I have not read all of it.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I haven't read all of it. But
all right.
You know, he says, do me a favor. Can you do us a favor? And he says, can you work with my personal attorney, which is highly irregular?
Mm-hmm. That seems a little suspect.
And then, or if it is a political call, then he says, call my attorney general. So, I mean, they're...
In what you've seen so far, Steve, is there ever a dollar amount mentioned?
He didn't say, I'm going to hold up the money until you do something in this call.
All right.
Now, keep in mind, there were reportedly up to 8 calls. So we don't know what the whistleblower knows, and that's what probably will be key to this.
But we also don't know who the whistleblower is, but we know it comes from a very small pool of people who were in the room at the time, right?
I don't know that. I mean, it might be someone who talked to someone in the room.
Huh. See, that's why this is confusing to me.
Yeah.
And also, as for transcripts, one would think there would be actual transcripts. You know, the president, any president, is not immune to having... We the people look at these things.
The other piece of reporting out of today is the intelligence community's inspector general looked at all of this and told the acting director of national intelligence, he replaced Dan Coats, that the call could be a federal campaign violation. So the president's own appointees said, hey, this could be trouble here. And they sent it to the attorney general, Bob Barr's office, and they looked at it and said, no, we don't think so.
And the difference might be, and correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I hate politics. I never talk politics, but politics are in the news. There's no way to avoid it.
Right.
But, you know, the alleged collusion with Russia, he was not president at the time. He was a candidate. The fact that he is president at this time makes things different, correct?
It makes things different in that he's got the power of the state, control of the government and the funding and things like that. The essential... The act of it is just as wrong. But that's what's so funny about this. I mean, the president has spent the first 3 years of his administration fighting charges that he, you know, asked for help or got help from the Russians. And then he seems to be doing it here when it comes to finding information on Joe Biden.
Can't we find our own information? I mean, why do we need another country to find out information about Joe Biden and his son Hunter?
Well, this had because Hunter was involved with
business the Ukraine.
Dealings in Ukraine, and that's what. And apparently, they'd been looked into, and there was nothing to be prosecuted there. But the president wanted another look.
Steve, I don't know if you got to hear during Steve Cochran's show when Ro Khan was on with him. A question came up that I thought about yesterday, and that is, does this impact Joe Biden's chances in his run for the presidency
or not? Well, it's weird, isn't it? But I think it will really hurt him. You know, he is, I mean, if you believe the reporting, the Hunter stuff had been looked into, there is no there. But President Trump has brought it up again, so now Biden's got to defend himself against this again. With all of this going through with the whistleblower and all that, they will be again relitigating all of the Hunter Biden stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I think this hurts Joe Biden too. I really do.
But what
even
is...
though it might not be fair, that might not be fair. There might not be anything there. Apparently, there was nothing there. But it's still going to be
still
talked
a blemish.
About, and the accusations are going to be repeated and repeated and repeated. And I think that's going to hurt him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe with something on him, he'll be more desirable to people. Who knows? I don't know what's going on in this world.
But by the same token, Donald Trump has suggested that this, what's going on now, actually would help his chances of reelection because his base will support him more. Is that true? Do you see that being true or not?
Well, the president has governed by saying he's been unfairly under assault, and you know the people who support him then rally around him and become more and more hardened around him. So
isn't it strange though that one man would benefit from this and one man could suffer?
Well,
from
yeah, and we're just it's conjecture. But the other part of it he might be looking at is you know Bill Clinton was impeached and actually left with remarkably high.
Approval ratings.
Approval numbers,
yeah.
right. Now, the difference, though, Bill Clinton didn't run for a re-election after being impeached.
That's true.
That's a very different... It's easier to like a guy on his way out than it is to like a guy that you're going to have to decide again and again.
Yeah.
I'm so baffled.
Well,
I am just really...
It's a baffling situation.
I feel so stupid about all this stuff because I don't know what to make of it, but I'm not alone. I know that.
Yeah.
Don't feel stupid. Just commit yourself to learning more about it. That's what we need to do. Find.
Yeah.
I've never had to learn all this stuff before.
Well,
it's on the final. You got to know it for the final, Wendy.
Is it an oral?
Yeah.
Okay. Really? You should be on the bonus hour.
No, I didn't mean it. I meant an oral exam. That's all I meant.
Yeah.
Well, you listen, you hear everything.
King double entendre.
That's really not what I meant.
We'll take a break. We'll have a stern talking to Steve.
I'm making that look that he made earlier about the
Cubs. I saw that look. I saw that look. All right, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN Radio. A text from 630. Wendy, you need a refresher class in civics before the next election. Can I just say I'm not alone? I mean, there would be people enrolled in this class with me because in the past, what you did is you watched debates, you learned about all the candidates, you made the right decision on how it would benefit you. That's really how you make a decision on who to vote for president. And then whoever wins, you deal with it and move along. Now there's no discussion. There's no dealing with it because everybody says it's my way or the highway. It doesn't have to be that way.
So in choosing the candidate that you will pick, not just for president, but for mayor of your town, for governor, whatever election is coming up, as you're making that decision, and a quick sidebar to what I'm about to say, I think, sadly, so many of us at this point just vote Democrat or just vote Republican, and you don't really take an honest look at the people. You just go, what party are they representing? Well, then they get my vote. And I think that's tragic because
I do too.
You can get good people on either side. You really can. But do you think most people do what you just said and say, what's best for me? Or do you think most people say, what's best for the city? What's best for the state? What's best for the country? Because I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I honestly do that. I would like whoever represents me to be good for me, but I try my best to say what's best for the future of the city that I live in or the state that I live in or the country that I live in.
That's big of you.
Oh, well, because, I try to.
You know, a lot of times you will base it on how their policy will affect you. I mean, that's really the main thing, and it's you're a better person
but I've
than
had,
I am.
Now, please. But there have been candidates that I have liked, and I've said to myself, I think they're out of touch, usually financially. You know, there have been candidates that I go, I think that guy has had money around him so often that he doesn't grasp what the average American has to do to survive.
I'm dying to guess who that might be.
You don't have to guess. But there have been a couple that I've said,
in the past, I think
that guy's interesting. But honestly, if you pinned him down and said, what is the price of milk and what is the price of bread, he'd have no idea what the price of milk and bread was.
Still dying to guess who it was from the past.
Calvin Coolidge.
I thought so.
That Calvin Coolidge. Ugh.
And, you know, everyone says Wendy pleads ignorant constantly. Yeah, when it comes to politics, I do. I don't even like talking about it. But again, it's in the news. It needs to be talked about. We have an election coming up and some procedural things that are going on right now that I'm telling you, I'm not the only one confused by it.
This is historic in that it's never been like this. Right. Even in the days, I mean, your impeached presidents were Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon. And yes, I was younger and didn't have a full grasp on what was going on because I was much younger, especially during the Richard Nixon one. I remember watching the news and understanding a fraction of it. But it's just so different this time in every way.
And Nixon did resign.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Who else? There was another president that was impeached, I thought. Back in the day, you
Andrew
loved that.
Andrew Johnson was impeached in the post-Civil War era after President
Because why,
Lincoln.
Steve? Do you remember why?
Well, I wasn't there.
You were not there?
No.
All right.
But I think it had to do with how the post-Civil War country was going to be sort of managed, you know, how they were going to bring the South back in. I don't remember the details of it, but...
But it had to do something with the Civil War.
He was the president in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, yes. So then, you know, the country had to wrestle with, what do we do now?
Right.
How do we come back together?
Do we come back together? Will we ever come back together?
Well, when Steve mentioned Civil War, in my head, I'm thinking to myself, you mean like the one that's going on now? Because there is something of a Civil War going on, a red versus blue Civil War. It's not geographic at this point, but there is a bit of a Civil War going on right now.
Remember the days, and you bring this up often, that your parents would have people over for dinner, and there'd be a discussion because Republicans and Democrats could come together and hang out together.
Yep.
And they could have a discussion, and voices weren't raised, doors were not slammed, and people did not leave the house.
I can't tell you how many times I remember it vividly. They would invite over, we'd have, in addition to my parents, there'd be six or eight other people, and there'd be a political discussion during dinner, and it was divided, sometimes 50-50, sometimes it was a little more uneven. but they would all get their opinions out and their ideas. Nobody was yelling. Nobody was screaming. And I would listen and I would say, wow, they obviously have very different ideas on what should be going on right now. But it was conducted in a very professional manner. I don't know that it would play out that way today. I don't know if it would work ever. That way.
Yeah. I don't know that it will ever come back to that. And forgive me for being curious. If I don't know something, I will ask questions and try and find out more. Here's a weird thought. Sometimes you can learn from other people's opinions.
Yeah. Yep.
So why can't we?
Why has that gone away? I don't know.
Well, and what can I do? What can we do to make it come back where we can just have a discussion?
Right. That would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be really nice. All right. In a little bit,
I'm sad.
No, don't be, Wendy.
I'm just sad.
Would you like a balloon animal?
Yes.
Right.
If we walked around and gave both parties balloon animals, that would bring the world together.
Problem solved.
I get it.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll get you some news. Steve has the news, and then Paul Lisnick will explain a little more about what's going on today politically. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Can you make something different than a wiener dog?
That's all
please?
I can do. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Paul Lisnick, our friend Paul Lisnick, political analyst for WGN-TV, host of Politics Tonight, weeknights at 5:30, and then shown again at 10 p.m. on CLTV. Unfortunately, Paul, we have booked you on a day where there's not much going on politically.
I was just going to say, let's talk about, like, you know, who we think will run for mayor in 4 years.
All right, that'll be fine. I want to say, let's start out with a timeline of what's going on, but you can't really. There's so much going on. There's so much to discuss. What's your take on what's going on right now, Paul?
Well, and if I wish I could give you a brief answer, I'll try. So the bottom line is that while there have been all sorts of challenges to the president's, you know, conduct and things throughout the years, Nancy Pelosi was never ready to take that step, be it emoluments, violations alleged, be it obstruction. She just felt that the American people weren't on board with it. Polls showed the same thing. But this was different. This being characterized as Democrats as an effort to, you know, reach out to the leader of a foreign government by our president and essentially to strike a deal for the investigation of a political opponent is what clearly in her mind rises to a situation of what the Constitution requires, a high crime or misdemeanor, putting national security at risk. That's what Nancy Pelosi says. That's why that and a combination of increased pressure from her caucus led her to take the step that she did.
Paul, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, what this does for Democrats down the line, Bill, is, you know, as you know, the White House administration has stymied and blocked them every step of the way. They're not going to be able to do that once things are official like this. If articles of impeachment come out, then the White House has to comply with Congress's requests and demands. So that's what's interesting about this down the line is all of that, you know, stonewalling goes away when there's articles of impeachment if they get to that point.
I've heard people say that the Democrat, Nancy Pelosi in particular, but the Democrats on the whole, were just waiting like buzzards for something like this. Do you subscribe to that theory or not?
Nancy, but the closest I can't confirm that, but the closest thing Nancy did say, Nancy, my good friend, Chuck and Nancy, that she did say a while back was, you know, where she didn't want to proceed, she said the president will ultimately impeach himself. So that would have been, I think, where people would get the notion where she said, sit back, he's going to do something, which gives us, you know, no way to turn away. This morning, of course, we have the release of the transcript, so that's the next piece of this puzzle, but it doesn't resolve anything.
But now, transcripts not of the conversation, but of like a summary of who was in the room, and it's not the actual conversation, is it?
Correct, Wendy, and it's really important to note that because when you read it, and I've read it, I'm sure you guys have it, it reads like you're reading the transcript, but it's not a transcript. Essentially, it's a summary taken down by whoever's, you know, paying attention to that call, whose job it is. Democrats will now, I'm sure, take the step to say, now we want the tape, if there is one. Now we want to know what was said. Now we want a transcript. There's something really interesting in this transcript, too, when you take a look at it closely. When it gets to the part where the president, essentially, first of all, you have the president of Ukraine sucking up to President Trump, you know, big time in it. He just, I'm trying to drain the swamp here, says the president of Ukraine, and I'm trying, you know, you've taught us so much, and we're trying to do everything you do. So, you know, and President Trump likes to be treated that way. Most world leaders know that. But what's really interesting is, after he says all of that and says, and by the way, we want to increase our military, military equipment from the U.S., the president says, and I need a favor. Now, he's not real explicit about it, but he does talk about Hunter Biden and that something has gone on here. What's really interesting, in the middle of the Hunter Biden stuff is an ellipse, a dot, dot, dot. Now, we were told this is unredacted. We were told that everything is here that they have. But as you look at the transcript in a couple places, dot, dot, dot. And I'm going, why is there a dot, dot, dot? And why is it happening right where you'd be curious to know what it is that is being said? I'm not suggesting, I don't know that anything was there.
Yeah.
But as a lawyer, it's something that if I were a lawyer in this case, I would be asking about.
Who was present during this phone call that took these this transcript type thing? The memo.
As far as who was president in terms of was the vice president and whatever, I believe that those kinds of folks would be there, but that's not who's taking the transcript. This is a, probably a national, everything from somebody, at a secretarial level who's tracking this, but also intelligence people, the Foreign Service people. There are a variety of people who are paying attention to this. You know, Rudy Giuliani, who has been sticking himself in everything over the last few nights on Fox News, I've been watching him, and one of the things he said last night to Laura Ingraham, he goes, you know what, you want to know something, it's all right here. And he held up his phone because he says the State Department asked him to do what he was doing, and it's all right here. Well, you better be sure the Democrats will now want that phone and want to find out exactly what is there. There's still always that question of why did the president say, when we have to investigate corruption, you'll deal with Attorney General Barr. That makes sense. But you're also going to deal with Rudy Giuliani, a fine man. Well, Rudy Giuliani is his private lawyer.
Right. It's
What is he doing in this mix if this is all about, beating down corruption and investigating corruption in our country? If you put Rudy Giuliani in it, and I understand if you're a Trump supporter, you want to take the line of saying it's appropriate, everything's great, but it's hard to see it as anything except an election maneuver.
I know that Nancy Pelosi wants to be sure of something when she started the impeachment proceedings, because, the Democrats will not look very great if this turns out to be nothing. I guess my question to you is, if nothing transpired to incriminate Donald Trump, why wouldn't he just release the information?
Well, he's going to say he did. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's why I bring up this point of the ellipses. Did we get the transcript today? It appears that we did.
So in his eyes, this would count as the...
And then And then I'm going to go beyond that and say he did say, the White House has said, they will be releasing. As far as the eyewitness accounts, that will probably have to get demanded. They'll put up blocks to that for a while. But I think the more important document that people need to see is the whistleblower complaint. Because this document itself, you can kind of read a couple of different ways. Republicans already reading it a certain way to say it doesn't say anything. But the whistleblower complaint, it is what's already known. We don't know who it is, but we know it's not just this phone call. This whistleblower is reporting about more than that. So that document may come out today as well. It's possible. It's certainly supposed to come out in the next day or two. And the whistleblower has also requested to appear before Congress, and that's it may be happening before the end of the week.
Paul, it's Bertrand. By law, right, this report has to be sent to the Congress, the whistleblower report.
Well, only if you find the word shall to mean mandatory, Steve. And the answer is yes. Shall means mandatory. So the notion that, that IG or somebody saying we don't have to turn it over, we're not turning it over, they can't do that. And again, I always, when you support the president, people step in and say, they have a right to do it. Look, the law is the law. And many of my comments I'm making to you right now, I speak as a lawyer in saying it. The law is clear. They must turn it over to Congress.
Will the whistleblower's version be any different than the memorandum that we've seen at this point?
We don't know. And I don't think the whistleblower's version is going to be you're not going to get a transcript from the whistleblower. The whistleblower is probably going to say, here's the kind of things I heard on the account. Who knows if the whistleblower testifies, if it's a lips thing that I'm just asking about, wondering about a bit, if there is something to it, maybe the whistleblower, if they heard that the phone call and they were there for the whole call, among other things, maybe that person will shed light when appearing before Congress to say, there was more to it than that I remember.
Paul, we were trying to determine exactly, in terms of the whistleblower, was he or she in the room during the phone call, or was it secondhand information? Do you know the answer to that?
I don't think we know that right now. We don't even know if it's a man or woman, as you said. So we just don't know enough. We only know it's somebody in the intelligence community.
Do you think this whistleblower will ever come forward? Will we ever know?
They've asked to appear before Congress. Oh, now, whether you'll get to know who they are, I don't know, and get them on your show, I can't promise you
no,
that.
No, I don't mean
how would they do that? Would there be complete anonymity, disguise the voice, disguise?
It can be done as a closed hearing. It can be done as a closed hearing. That would keep us the public from seeing it. And certainly there's enough ways in and out of the House chambers, or you know, various rooms that that person may not be seen. It also may not be, it's probably not a well-known name, so somebody could probably walk in and, you know, we wouldn't know who it is. I mean, here's the thing. Because this person has something to report beyond this phone call, if that's what the rumor is, that there are other things, it's somebody high enough in the intelligence community that they tend to be around the president, that they tend to be within these meetings and these sessions. So, you know, this is not the nighttime, you know, janitorial staff who's reporting this stuff, who happened to catch something. This is somebody who's around a lot. So it may not be somebody that we know the name of, but once we find out a bit about who this person is, and they are willing to come forward, then that may tell us a lot about how. Remember, the president's already said this person is a, you know, a traitor and they're not a patriot. And, you know, Democrats would respond, actually, when a whistleblower comes forward, that's exactly the definition of being a patriot.
So,
you know, they're putting their life and career on the line.
How much time is spent, if you're Trump or those close to him, how much time is spent trying to determine who this whistleblower is? Is that an important part of the story right now to them, or do they just move on beyond it?
Well, I don't know that the president doesn't know who the whistleblower
is
really? Already.
Oh.
Well, because the DNI does, the Director of National Intelligence, that they know who it is. They've already been in touch with the whistleblower's counsel.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's been an interesting shift there. The first letter that went from the DNI to the counsel was sort of along the lines of, we have determined that this complaint doesn't rise to the level of urgent, so drop it. And then I don't know what happened, but something along the line led to another memo being issued, which basically said, we're here to enforce, you know, the Constitution. We've got a job to do. We're going to do it. We're going to protect you. So somebody somewhere said something about saying, you know, you've got a job to do. You know, where this gets cleared up, guys, is if everybody decides to put the security of the country ahead of party. This thing is so partisan that if you're a Republican, you know, you're screaming that this is a witch hunt, as the president is. If you're a Democrat, this guy's got to go tomorrow. I only hope that there is a way, and Republicans did it yesterday. I shouldn't say Republicans. The Senate did it yesterday when they passed unanimously the unofficial, but the request to the White House that they release the whistleblower report. Not even Mitch McConnell blocked it. Every Republican signed on. We need more of that. More of both sides saying, look, let's get to the bottom of this, and whatever it proves to be, it proves to be.
All right, the House started the impeachment proceedings. Then it would go to the Senate. And what about, you mentioned putting their life and their careers on the line. If a senator votes for it, isn't their career over?
Well, their career's on the line with it. You look at people like Susan, well, I'm trying to blank on her name, from Maine.
Susan Collins.
Yeah, thank you. Susan Collins. You know, people who are in these districts where they're in trouble anyway. Which way are they going to go? But to remember, Wendy, you need two-thirds of the Senate to remove. The odds of that happening are just so small, unless something really, you know, comes out here that even, like happened, you know, in the Nixon days, during Watergate, the president enjoyed a very significant level of popularity until those hearings were public and people throughout the country began to hear exactly what went on. That's when things changed. That's what Democrats are trying to do. And by the way, in doing our WGN morning show this morning, I made the point, some people are saying, well, why didn't Nancy Pelosi assign a special commission to handle this? Where are all these sort of special designates? She basically is letting six committees do their thing. And my answer to that is, there is no instruction book on this. Impeachments only happened a couple of times in our history, Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, and almost with Nixon. That's the only time this stuff has ever been addressed. So there's no right or wrong way to do this. Pelosi seems to be taking the broader approach, which is let various committees do their thing. We could criticize that by saying, well, you're not being focused, Nancy. Get focus here and have one commission deal with it all. She has her reasons for letting it play out this way, and I guess only time will tell. But she also said she wants it done expediently. She'd like this wrapped up by the end of the year. That's an answer to those people who think Democrats want to stretch this out through the 2020 election. She's not allowing that.
Since you mentioned the 2020 election, Paul, in your opinion, how does it affect both sides? Does it? We kind of speculated about this earlier, how it affects Joe Biden's chances, but also how it affects Donald Trump's chances. What do you think?
Well, you know, the president would say it helps him, and there are those who would say it helps him. It depends how it comes out. I mean, if this gets worse and worse and worse, then obviously it's not being of assistance to him. If the Democrats do what they did in Mueller days and just can't go anywhere with it, I mean, Democrats have been fairly weak throughout this whole process. You know, if it just, if this is just a whole bunch of messy stuff out there and the public is not with them and it's just going nowhere, then nobody sends a message, Bill, better than President Trump. Nobody controls the message better than he does. So he's already doing it. And within time, you'll have the country talking about the terrible scandal involving Joe Biden, especially if Biden goes on to, you know, do well towards this nomination. They'll all be talking about Joe Biden being a bad guy, and there won't be any discussion about the president. The president is masterful at guiding the discussion in that way.
I just don't. You should see my face.
We're winded.
It's just so befuddling to me. It really is. What's going on?
That's why I said it's important that people put the country over party. Look, let me say this.
All right.
If the president did what he's alleged to do, if he made the, essentially, you want your money, you go after Biden, my political opponent, it's absolutely an impeachable offense. I say that as a lawyer. I'm not partisan one way or the other. As a lawyerly comment, that is an impeachable offense. That is an unconstitutional step, but it has to be proven.
What about the people who say, well, that's Donald Trump being Donald Trump? What do you, I hear that every day.
You will get that. I mean, the president, he's known for blowing things up. He's known for, but that doesn't say, and you get to offer what essentially will be described as a quid pro quo. We're going to give you your, you know, $400 million when you give us what we need on Biden. And again, here's the thing that I'm finding interesting in the transcript that a lot of people aren't talking about a lot, not yet, which is just, and I said it earlier, the way in which the president of Ukraine just sucks up to the president in this transcript. Oh, Mr. President, you do things, we're just trying to be like you. I'm draining the swamp here. All of these comments, the president loves it. And so, and it's after those comments, and after the comment about we want more military equipment from the United States, the president says, I need you to do me a favor. That, the lawyer in me speaking, is where the quid pro quo begins to happen, if it happened.
What do you expect will happen, Paul, in the next 24 hours? Will there be any major movement on this in the next 24 hours or not?
There'll be a lot of tweets.
There'll be a lot of tweets. And that's to show you that the president, you know, yesterday, apparently, when Nancy Pelosi was speaking, I guess reporters were searching for the president. They were told he was on executive time. And that clearly means he was watching Nancy Pelosi on television. But I think I can't tell you what's going to happen in 24 hours beyond more talking. I can tell you that I think by the end of the week, which is just a few days away, I think we get the whistleblower complaint. And I think we may find out that the whistleblower is meeting with members of Congress. That may happen by the end of the week. That's reasonable to expect.
Thank you for trying to clear some of this up. I've been accused of being ignorant, and I should take another civics class, but this is all new to me, and I'm sure you as well.
Now, your sister Betsy tells me how smart you are. I know that.
There.
She doesn't say that, but I thought that was nice to say.
That was nice to say.
Well, Paul, you've got to admit, as I come to Wendy's defense for a second, it's very confusing. And when you throw in things like Bill Clinton was impeached, but he didn't leave office, but Richard Nixon was not impeached, but he did leave office, it clouds it up a little bit for most
of us. There's no question about it. And I can also say this about it. This is, of the impeachment history we have, this is the most consequential and important proceedings we have going on. And why do I say that? This is the first time that an impeachment is being pursued for issues related to national security. Bill Clinton was all about Whitewater deals and what sex did he have with an intern and all that stuff. And you can, you know, however you feel about it, you get to feel about it. Andrew Johnson was essentially being gone after for policies that he held. And Richard Nixon, of course, was criminal, but it never happened. And it was also domestic stuff. This is the first time that issues of national security have been raised in an impeachment proceeding, and that makes this historical and consequential no matter how it comes out.
That's Paul Liznick. Paul is the political analyst for WGN-TV. He's the host of Politics Tonight. You can watch it weeknights at 5:30 p.m., and then they show it again at 10 p.m. right there on CLTV. Paul, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
I bet we'll talk again soon.
I bet we will.
Right.
That could happen. Thanks, Paul.
Be well.
That's a bet I'll take for sure.
Yep.
I guess I understand a little bit more, but still a little confusing. Thank you, Paul.
Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Every other Wednesday, Dane Neal comes by and we talk about things mostly food-related, not 100% food-related, but he's here today. You know Dane is the host of On the Road with Dane Neal and a frequent partner of mine on days that Wendy cannot come in for some reason. Dane is always nice enough to come in. Huh, Dane?
I do the best Wendy imitation.
Yep, no one knows it. There's some days sometimes, I don't even know. I'm in the room. I look over.
Sometimes, oh, does Wendy have a cold? Well, who knows, right? We
don't know. You guys, I am a girl, okay?
Yeah,
do
we
you
know.
Forget that?
No, we saw your memo.
Mamo.
What's up, Dane?
Oh, my gosh. What is up is we are in the middle. We talk about Chicago all the time as kind of, you know, one of those great food cities, maybe the greatest food city. These guys would be some of the biggest cheerleaders for it. But this is the weekend where Chicago, I'll contend, is the epicenter of the food world at an event that started out, you know, as you didn't know what it was going to be, right? You didn't know if you were going to be able to take that place. And 10, 11 years later, now you have really what I'll say is one of the crown jewels as far as food events around the country, Chicago Gourmet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in studio, we're all going to be adding into some of the events and things. Sam Toya, he is the president of the Illinois Restaurant Association, the guiding driving force behind the whole thing. Serafin Alvarado, we've talked to a lot of chefs, you guys know, over the years.
Yeah.
But Serafin is a master sommelier. He for Southern Glazer. He is the main guy there when it comes to all of the wine, spirits, the liquid portion of Chicago Gourmet. Serafin is here with us as well. And
hi, guys.
Hey. Welcome to the show. Sam, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
What Dane said is true. This is a huge weekend for all of us.
Oh, Chicago Gourmet is the premier food and wine show here in Chicago. I don't care what they say on South Beach or Pebble Beach. We have the best food and wine show in Chicago, Millennium Park, fourth weekend, every September, our 12th year.
He'll fight you.
No, I know. I've seen him get into a scuffle.
His certain brand of aggressive enthusiasm, I think, is really important.
Sam, what makes it so darn good?
Well, we have over 250 chefs that participate. We have, you know, some of the greatest chefs like Rick Bayless, Stephanie Iser, Joe Flom, Art Smith, Lorena Garcia, to name a few. So we have great talent. We have talent that comes in like Andrew Zimmern. You know, so we just got some great chefs there, great talent. We have some great wines from Southern Glazer Wines and Spirits. That's our presenting sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to taste great food and taste great wines and some great spirits and some beers, come to Chicago Gourmet.
Some of the best personalities, and Sam mentioned some of those. And I don't think any brighter as far as great Chicago chefs, legends, right, and ambassadors. And it isn't just the events that we think of as the traditional, whether it's the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, Chicago Gourmet Big Fest. They've built so many cool events that are sort of satellite deals. One is the Chili Cook-Off. Jimmy Banos is a big part of it. See you on the line with
us. Yes. Hey, Jimmy.
Jimmy, welcome.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, what's up? How are you?
We're all hungry. Just hearing your voice makes us hungry.
I got to tell you, so am I. This Starbucks egg sandwich is not doing it for me. First of all, Sam Toya is the best. Him and Mary Kay are the spearhead of this event, and they are just tremendous.
Jimmy, back at you. It's all about teamwork, and we have the best culinary team right here in the culinary capital of Chicago.
Yeah.
We are the best culinary capital, and we blow New York away. Forget about it. It's not even a thought.
Raise the white flag, New York. You don't stand a chance.
Jimmy, you know, we all know about it, and you've been a part of it since the beginning, all the great stuff that happens down there in Millennium Park, but building in these extra events, you know, oftentimes those main things get sold out, and to kind of be more things to more people, the Chili Cook-Off, you're going to be a big part of that coming up.
Oh, this is exciting. Sarah asked me, and I said, this is a fantastic idea, and she's got some really good chefs, Abe Conlon from Fat Rice, Diana Davila from Mia Takaya, Carlos Gayatan, Cedric Hardin, Kevin Hickey from Duck Inn. Kevin Hickey's been throwing a little barbs at us already, so it's like, oh, my God. It's like, come on, Kevin. And he thinks he's going to take it all, but it's going to be fun. You know, I think it's from 8 o'clock at night till 11. So, and then we have some firefighters joining us, too. And actually, oh, that's right, my sonny boy's coming, too. He's we're going to be against each other, so I'm not worried about that. I got him. I taught him how to make chili. So it's
Jimmy, it's a rivalry, but it's a friendly rivalry. Agreed?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. I mean, I'm going to say that I'm definitely going to win anyway.
Yeah,
I've been making Texas chili.
Right. No question about it, Jimmy. You're going to win. I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my bones.
Hey, Jimmy, before the end of the segment, we're going to have two tickets for listeners to go to the chili cook-off. So, but as far as kind of the ground rules for it, because chili can be interpreted in a bunch of different ways. Is your chili going to have sort of a gumbo flair to it, or are you going to go traditional chili? Or you don't want to tell?
No, I'm doing traditional Texas chili, no beans, no tomatoes, and I usually put pork in mine, but of course the Beef Council is sponsoring this, so no pork. I think a lot of people will do a lot of different renditions of it, and that's the fun of it all, because you're going to get, I'm sure some people are going to put seafood in it, some people are going to do something totally different, so it's going to be... It'll be pretty interesting to see what happens.
Jimmy, before we let you go and go to break, we're going to have Sarah coming on with us to talk a little bit about it in the past. But your perspective as, you know, a longtime Chicago guy from decades ago to now, where Chicago is truly recognized as one of those culinary capitals. Talk a little bit about Chicago Gourmet, just your thoughts on how it has kind of just emerged and developed into one of these kind of really signature events for the whole country.
You know, it really is truly a premier event in the country, and it's just a great event. You know, it brings unbelievable amount of chefs. The beverage world comes together, and it's just really a fun day. Even if it rains a little bit, because hey, Sam, we've been through more different storms and this and that, and we have. You guys pull it together, you know, and it's really a good event. Everybody has fun. You almost wish it was longer. I think that's why they did the nighttime event also too. You know, I enjoy it when it's like 5 o'clock comes around 5:30. It's like, oh, come on, I want another, you know, 5 hours of this, you know. And it's just exciting. It's a great time of year. I love doing this.
Chicago Gourmet again will be held Tuesday, September the 24th through Sunday, September the 29th at Millennium Park. I don't know how they how the price structure is. Do you just show up?
Sam, for the different events to get tickets, where can they go?
Yes, you could. Well, we still have tickets available for Sunday. And you go to chicagogourmet.org. Again, mm-hmm. chicagogourmet.org, and you can purchase tickets for. We still have Sunday events. Obviously, we got the big chili event. We have Rise and Shine. That's on Sunday morning. We have tickets for that as well. Mm-hmm. So, big chili event is on Saturday night. Tickets available. Sunday tickets are still available. chicagogourmet.org.
Thanks, Sam. Jimmy, great to talk
to you.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks, Sam. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
We'll see you soon. Thanks, Jimmy.
That's Jimmy Banos. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more discussion. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
China.
How hopeful, Wendy. That was so hopeful.
What do you want from me?
Dane Neal's here, everybody. Dane Neal's here, and we're talking about food, most notably the big event happening this week, Chicago Gourmet, which is being held at Millennium Park Tuesday through Sunday. You want to go to chicagogourmet.org for more information.
I don't know if Wendy sounded... She sounded sort of resigned to
the fate. Did you get a little bit of that?
Yeah. Well, people are going to Chicago Gourmet resigned to a fate of some great food and amazing wines, and this is exciting to have Master Sommelier Serafin Alvarado in studio with. We talked, you know, to and about a lot of chefs and all the food, and it's all great, but on the wine side, it is world class. Serafin, you know, talk a little bit about not only the wines that are going to be there, but also some of those educational seminars and different programs where people can learn more too.
Absolutely, Dane. So one of the greatest pleasures I've had in my career is to be part of Chicago Mason's year one, and through Southern Glazer's Wine Spirits, the presenting sponsor. I've been involved with the festival and seen how it has evolved and grown since then, and my involvement has been with the wines themselves, but also the seminars. So this festival allows to bring some of the top premier wine professionals in the country. So people like Fred Dame, people like local like Alpana Singh, Joe Spellman, Kathy Morgan from New York. So through our network, in terms of Master Sommeliers and people that work within the network of Southern Glazer Wine Spirits, we bring some of the top educators and top connoisseurs. And it's fascinating. So we have this seminar program that runs in the core room, which I always has said that is the best kept secret of the festival.
Not anymore.
Because you have access to these seminars, 45 minutes, six wines, top of the line wines. and is a quick and easy in and out, and really provides you a great, great experience along with happening in the lawn, which is fascinating as well, because the lawn, you have access to all these amazing wines, which I suggest you have to create a strategy, because there's so many wines, you can be overwhelmed. So what I suggest is basically have a strategy. Well, I'm going to focus on one grape variety. It can be on Chardonnays, it can be a Sauvignon Blanc, it can be a Riesling, or Pinot Noir, or something of that sort. Because it's very difficult to just cover everything in a one-day setting. So that's a good way to do it, reds or whites, or something along those lines. But it's just fascinating. Then we had the Grand Cru event, which is a brilliant idea. It's an extra ticket. Once you're in the park, it's an extra ticket, but allows you to taste the best of the best. And that's something that I also heavily involve in terms of procuring all these wines with our suppliers and just showcasing top, but extremely top-of-the-line wines along that two-hour session. And it's just fascinating.
Well, you hear the excitement in your voice, and it's one of those things where you think you want to add and include as much as you can, have people kind of do it in sort of segments, right, so it can be manageable as far as the education. But for the listeners out there that don't necessarily, it's a lot of wine. How many different wines or wineries or varieties are represented? Also on the spirit side, how many different expressions and brands are represented? There's a lot to do on the drink side.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, from wine perspective, there's around 500 different.
Yikes.
Yeah, jeez.
And producers all around.
That's fantastic.
And it's the best of the best. And the excitement and the people who are pouring the wines there are people that are involved with these wineries. And so the level of excitement and engagement with the attendees, you can stop by, talk to them, ask questions, and they're very, very helpful in terms of providing guidelines along those lines. So really cool. The other thing I really enjoy very much is that the theme aspect of how Chicago made in the last few years have focused on a particular themes. And this year, it's a light camera.
Lights, camera, napkins.
So it's all entertainment, all the aspect of theater, music, and all that stuff. And I have a musical background.
Oh, you do? What is that?
I'm a bass player.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
So I did a music scholarship back in the day and put that aside to pursue my master sommelier. And then recently, I'd kind of gone back into it. I have a band called The Rack and the Riddler. Which is all.
Are you going to be?
We're performing.
Oh, wow.
That's the whole point. Bring it up. We'll be on Sunday.
Performing. How fun is that?
Yeah, really cool. So we bring a little bit of that entertainment aspect. It goes along with the theme of that entertainment and music. And
I love the way that they build in the themes. And Sam, what are some of the other kind of themed elements that you're building into it? Not necessarily events, but just kind of things that kind of give it that extra sort of Hollywood style.
Well, at the Grand Cru, you know, we're going to have a lot of kind of theater stuff. We're going to have like music and stuff like that. So it's all tied into like theater. So Grand Cru, the whole theme, like I was saying, it's light, cameras, napkins. So
excellent.
You'll see it all throughout the weekend.
And when it comes to big stars, one of the biggest stars we have here in Chicago from Monteverde, James Beard Award winner. You've seen her on Top Chef, on Iron Chef, and of course, you'll see her front and center hosting the Chili Cook-Off. It's the one and only Chef Sarah Gruenberg. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
So, hi, Sarah.
So Sarah,
hey, Chef, how are you?
You know, Chili is thought of as not necessarily super fine dining, but you're going to put your spin out. You're kind of wrangle all of these great food personalities. Talk about the cook-off.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be so fun. Well, I'm originally from Texas, so I know a good thing about chili. And I say no beans, but, you know, to each the chef's their own. I think that the fun part of chili is it really is a big melting pot of flavors. You can layer in. I've seen chilies used that are vegetarian, all different kinds of proteins. I'm super excited to see what these chefs are going to come up with.
I always thought you had to put beans in chili because my mom made it when I was growing up, and it was always the light red kidney beans. And I don't really even like them, so I didn't really realize you didn't have to put them in there.
Well, that's the Midwestern style of chili, but it's a joke amongst chefs. Are you putting beans in your chili?
Yeah, that's good to know. Well, yeah, are there going to be other styles that you know are going to be represented? I don't know if you've gotten sort of the cheat sheet of what people are going to be bringing, but is there going to be like a white chili or maybe some, like a chicken chili can be really good too? Are there rules for how people are going to compete?
There are no rules, and we are looking to see what these chefs can do. And, you know, we have a great variety of chefs, and we even have a few firehouses competing in the cook-off. And I'm excited to see what their chili tastes like. I'm sure they know. In feeding hungry firefighters, they know exactly what to put in the chili to make it craveable and delicious.
How about it? They do know the chili recipe over at the firehouses.
Well, Sarah, we're going to be giving away two tickets to listeners for the Chili Cook-Off. Is it possible, as we let you go, and of course people can see you over at Monteverde all the time, is that if maybe you'll taste something this weekend that may make it on the menu over there?
Maybe. You never know. Little Chili Mac coming your way.
Oh, there's the secret. Sarah, thanks so much. Appreciate your involvement.
Thanks, Chef.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Appreciate it.
I went to ChicagoGourmet.org, and you can click on purchase tickets, and I noticed Saturday is sold out. But there are so many different price points and different things going on. ChicagoGourmet.org.
There's something for everyone. Go to ChicagoGourmet.org.
So how do we give away the tickets for the Chili Cook-Off?
Wendy, what do you think? Caller number 12. Caller number 12 right now at 312-981-7200. We'll win that pair of tickets. Caller 12.
So we're waiting, ChicagoGourmet.org. So when did you guys decide to build the yoga in? And has that been well received, or is it just kind of a lonely,
it's
open
every
field?
Every year, more and more people go. You know, what's the best way to work off some calories after you were at Chicago Gourmet on Saturday? Come to Rise and Shine Gourmet and work out a little bit. Do some yoga and sweat a little bit.
Can you have a mimosa?
Heck
before?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's all about, you know,
all right, it's just checking.
Ooh, wine and spirits.
Just checking. What about a Bloody Mary in
Absolutely.
Yoga?
Absolutely. Right. The best in the city.
Awesome.
All right. An IV of Jack Daniels. Is that where you draw the line? Where's the line, Sam?
If you want it, I'll get it for you. I'm here to host.
Sam's like, no problem.
No problem.
We can say hello very quickly to the winner. Jane, where are you calling from?
Oakland.
You are going to
the Chili Cook-Off on the Harris rooftop. And I think it's Saturday night, right?
Yes, it's Saturday night, 8 to 11 on the Harris rooftop at Millennium Park. We'll see you there.
Have a great time.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, hang on. We'll get your info.
We're out of time. Again, if anyone wants more information, just go to ChicagoGourmet.org. Everything's there, the schedule and all the events and everything.
Best food and wine show in the country.
And tickets Sunday, still available for the main
event. Still available Sunday for the main event. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you for
really
having us.
Appreciate it. Thanks, gentlemen, guys. And you, Dane, as well. We appreciate it.
I can't do it without Dane.
Right? A little break, some news, and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. One of our favorite guests is in the studio with us today.
Our favorite is what he told us. Tony said he's our favorite.
He might be.
I think you might be, Tony.
He is Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery.
He can park wherever he wants. There's no parking restrictions when you're that.
Tony Fulmer, thank you for coming back.
As always, it's my pleasure.
I love to garden. I told you I have taken this year off. I've been a very bad gardener. No particular reason, but what can I do now to ensure that I will have more fun next year? Weeding, I've kind of let things go crazy. Do I mulch now? Help me, Tony.
There's an old expression. 1 year of weeds, 7 years of seeds.
Mm.
And so, if nothing else...
Goldenrod is all over my backyard.
So, if nothing else, even if you don't get a weed pulled, if it is invasive or aggressive, if nothing else, get out there and pull the seed heads off of it so that you don't have that bank of seeds coming up for another 7 years.
Wow.
Which leads into something that's really interesting for most people. Everybody gets really jazzed and excited about doing weed control in the spring. Because it's been a long winter and they want to get after the dandelions and those kinds of things. And the latest research indicates that fall is an excellent time to do weed control.
Really?
Especially in your lawn. Because what happens is in the fall, after that first frost, it's like nature gives those weeds a little slap in the face.
Yeah.
And it's saying winter's coming.
Yes.
So it starts taking all of the foods in. So leaves are like little solar panels.
Yeah.
So all that food it takes it down into the root system and stores it.
Uh-huh.
But it also does the same thing with the weed control products. So it's a really, really great time after the next few weeks when we have that first frost. If you have Creeping Charlie or you have dandelions or you have violets or you have some of these hard-to-control weeds, start thinking about making your first application of weed control on those in October after that first frost, and you may be surprised at what great control you start getting. You'll be way ahead next spring.
You will still have to do it in the spring, but
maybe
it'll make it easier. Oh,
no,
you don't think at all, maybe?
If you do a really good job this fall, you may wipe it out.
Yeah.
I'm going to work really hard. Now, violets, it breaks my heart to hear you say that's a weed, but I do notice that I may have planted a couple of violets. They're all over the place now. That's
a
weed?
We know that the definition of a weed is any plant that is unwanted or growing in a place where it's not desired. So
I guess I'm a weed.
You know, Wendy, that's not true. Is that true, Tony? I don't think that's true.
If you're a violet fetishist, then it's not a weed. But if you are a gardener, then yes. And the problem that makes those so difficult to control is you have, when you dig them up, you have that little tiny little, it's almost like a bulb.
Yes.
And so you can top kill that. But then there's stored foods in there, and it keeps trying to come back.
Oh.
And that's what makes violet so difficult.
They're relentless.
They are relentless.
They're relentless.
They're pretty,
Wendy.
Though. That's what makes it hard. And we had talked last time about the polar vortex, which destroyed a lot of people's boxwoods, and it really destroyed my Rose of Sharon, which was by our – it wasn't really covered at all.
Right.
And I didn't know what to do. I was going to dig it out. I just kind of trimmed it down. That thing is kind of filling in and growing back in.
Yep.
That's amazing to me.
Yep.
That's, in like 3 months time.
Well, that's what they do. That's what that plant will do, because again, you've got a plant that has a different silhouette, and it's not like a boxwood where it's slow growing, and if you lose a third of it, you cut that off and the plant tries to grow back, it'll always look like it's been, you know, a truck has driven into it, whereas the Rose of Sharon with ripe pruning in another year, that can look, you know, it can...
It's not as big, obviously, but it's definitely...
But presentable.
Flowers.
Yeah, to me, it's always a question of aesthetics. Is this something that I can live with, or is this something that I, you know, it just looks like a train wreck and I can't live with this and it has to come out. So
I want to remind listeners that they can reach Tony here at 312-981-7200. We always get a lot of calls and texts for you, and your percentage of helping people is through the roof, Tony. You've helped so many.
Close to 10%.
Almost 10%. You're right on the border of 10%.
I have a question for you, too. When you do, we planted a fringe tree in our backyard with, I think, is it privet or something that was right next to it?
Like, sure, privet hedge, yes.
It turned into a big hedge.
So
I like it.
You planted a Ceanthus.
Did you, Wendy?
I did.
Ceanthus virginicus.
Is that what you planted?
Bless your heart. Yeah, I guess I did.
Bless her heart.
Some of us don't speak Latin, Tony, what is it that you just said to Wendy?
You're a sporticulturist. I would have expected no less.
I speak a little bit of Latin, not enough. What does that mean that you asked Wendy?
That's just we try not to use common names because the same plant...
They get offended.
There's that.
Yeah.
But common names, some plants can have 10 or 12 different common names, and so you don't know if you're talking about the same plant.
So those
of us in the business, we use the Latin name, and that way we know that we're talking about the same plant.
Is that the genus and the species of the plant?
Is that the Latin binomial, indeed.
Yes, the binomial nomenclature.
So the privet got huge. You can trim that back or you can let it go freeform, which I did, and it's actually bigger than the fringe tree. But and then I put the clematis behind it. So now everything's kind of crowded.
Okay.
Can I move things around?
Okay, so if we're talking about transplanting, I thought you were going for a pruning question.
Pruning, I can ask you that too.
Okay, so yes, this is a great time to do either planting of new things, or you can do transplanting, especially of trees and shrubs. It's a great time to do this because as they're, again, just like the turf, as the plants are sending all those stored foods down low and going dormant, they don't have the stress of having to push water out to leaves and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So as long as soil temperatures, not air temperatures, but as long as soil temperatures are above 40 degrees, plants will still be making root growth, even though they're dormant upstairs, downstairs, they're rooting and whatever. So this is a great time. People are really missing a great opportunity to plant new things and be a step ahead next spring, or to do transplanting. You can absolutely get going. You can take that privet down. You can really
cut
that.
That's so fast growing.
Yeah. So if it was 8 feet tall, if you wanted, you could take that. When it drops its leaves, anytime from November to March, you could cut that back to 12 inches if you wanted.
All right, I don't want to go that small, but it does seem really crowded, and there are some other perennials around there that I can move. So.
Yes, but now with perennials, it's a little bit different than trees and shrubs.
Okay.
You want to move them as soon as possible because they need to have a chance to grow new roots and get anchored in, because if we have one of those winters where it's warm and cold and warm and cold and warm and cold, it tends to heave them up out of the ground if they're not rooted in.
Got it.
So you want to get them moved, and then as soon as the ground freezes, make sure you mulch.
He's Tony Fulmer, and he is amazing. He's the Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery. You can go to Chalet Nursery, 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette. Is it near something that you always mention?
Well, Wendy, there's a Panda Express right across the street. So if you're going to one, you might as well go to both.
ChaletNursery.com. We'll take a quick break. And if you have questions for Tony, which I know you do, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Ooh, that smell, that makes me think of lilacs. I love the smell of lilacs in the morning with Tony Fulmer having coffee.
Oh, that's romantic.
I have no memory of that, but it sounds great.
No, I'd like to do that. Tony Fulmer is the Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery. You can go to chaletnursery.com or go over to 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette. Linda has a question about lilacs, and this is Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, I was just wondering what's the best time of year to cut them back.
If you're talking about just a lighter maintenance pruning, you want to do that within 4 to 6 weeks of the time that they finish blooming in May. Because if you go out there and look at them right now, they have already, next year's buds are already visible. So if you do any pruning later in the season like that, you're cutting off next year's potential flowers.
Potential.
Yes.
Okay. And if I was to, after in May, after they're done blooming, and I want it, because right now they're probably 10 to 15 feet.
Yes.
So if I wanted to bring them down to like 6 feet, I could do that in May and not.
No. That was a different question. So that's what I would call a rejuvenation prune. You're trying to reclaim them and really bring them down a lot. What you're going to have to be prepared to do probably, you can do it a couple of ways, but to me, the easiest way is just to do it all in 1 year. So anytime from November until the middle of March, when the leaves are off the plant and the plant is completely dormant, you go in and you prune the plant back to the height that you want.
So take stems.
So you take stems off, yes. And again, remember when you're doing that, and Wendy and I have talked about this before, whenever you're pruning something, don't prune it flat across the top. That's the way it'll grow out and that'll look unnatural. So leave the center stems a little bit higher, and then as you're cutting, mound it so it's a little bit more rounded at the edges so you have a rounded silhouette when you finish. But you're going to lose flowers for 1 and maybe 2 years from doing that kind of a hard cut back.
Okay, then. Thank you so much.
Good luck, Linda. That's great advice. You helped me with my hydrangea to do that, and they've never looked better. Leave the higher part in the middle and then just kind of taper it down. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a question about whiteflies. I put some of my houseplants outside, and I was watering them, and I noticed they are loaded with whiteflies.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from insecticide, is there something I can do? I don't know if they get into the soil, and if I hose them off, you know, are they still there?
What are white flies, guys?
White flies are little tiny sucking insects, and even though they're tiny, they feed generally on the underside of the leaves, and when you disturb the plant, it's like a white cloud comes out, and they fly out, and they turn around and fly back. They love, so people that summer poinsettias over, they love poinsettias. You have to be prepared. This is a long battle, and I would say I would look at these plants and say, how important are these plants to me? So if you want to be green and organic, what you should think about doing is coming to see us and getting, there's a product called insecticidal soap, and it kills.
Bill, you bathe with that, don't you?
Once in a while I do, Wendy, yes.
Clearly
and
today,
and
you,
a moisturizer,
you smell,
Tony.
You smell good today. Yeah.
Thank you.
So with those, the thing about those is the upside is the downside. So what I'm saying is with the insecticidal soap, you have to spray them, you have to touch the insect, and it will kill them. But as soon as it dries, there's no residual. So if you miss 5 or 10 or 20, or there are eggs on the underside of the leaves, the next generation will be out with you in another 4 or 5 days. So,
just throw these plants out, Nancy.
I may. Oh, boy. Yeah, okay.
That's the downside of taking things out for the summer. They can come back in with livestock. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you. See, I would never deal with that.
It's a lot of work.
It's a... But the plants really love it. They love that high humidity, and they love the long days of summer, and they like natural rainfall. But you do risk bringing back in animals.
Susie has a question for you. Susie, okay. This is Tony Fulmer.
Hi, Susie.
Hi, Tony. My question is about sedum, and I know that it now goes by something else, so I apologize.
Hylotelphium, yes.
Okay, you say that.
Yes.
So... It's now really, it looks beautiful now, and yes. You were talking about taking care of the perennials if you're going to transplant them, et cetera. My sedum is so happy, and I have divided it, and it just thrives. Can I divide it later than now?
If you know that you want to divide it and you want to propagate it, I would go ahead and do it now. And with that plant, you could, if you do it very carefully, you might be able to separate it and leave it intact. And so still have the foliage up and still have the flowers and then the upcoming seed heads, without having to destroy those. But sooner is better than later with that. You want these perennials to get back in the ground and have as long a period of time to get rooted in as you possibly can.
So one connected question, the seed is huge and all flopped over. It probably is 3 feet tall.
Okay.
So is there a way, should I be cutting it back so that it gets a little bit more, you know,
typically
expensive?
if they're going to be tall like that, do you have it in shade? Do you fertilize it a lot? Do you water a lot? All three of those things or any of those things in combination will give you a taller, floppier plant. That's a succulent, so you can run that dry. You don't want to fertilize it, and you want to give it sun, and that will keep the plant shorter and fuller and more compact naturally.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good luck to you. There are some mum questions. Okay. One is...
How's your mum, by the way? Pretty good?
She was.
Tony.
Not with us.
None of our mums are.
No.
Okay.
Even my hylotelphium is gone, Tony.
Good for you.
Did you write that down?
No, I memorized it.
You did not. Are there specific mums to plant in ground as a perennial? If they're not, how do you make mums live longer?
Okay. When you buy a fall budded and blooming mum, chances are, again, it's not going to have the time to get anchored in. So what you want to look for, there's a correlation between varieties. If you look down in the pot or as you're pulling them out and looking at them, there'll be little tiny shoots coming up from the base, and those are next year's potential plants and flowers. There is a correlation. The more of those little suckers you see coming up from the base, the more apt the plant is to be with you next year. I would say do these mums with the idea that they're an annual. If you want to try and get them through the winter, years ago a great North Shore gardener told me, she said, I always mulch with sand. With sand, because the weight of the sand keeps the plants weighted down in the ground, and it's the frost heaving again that pulls them
that
up and exposes
them up.
The root system to cold temperature damage and dehydration. So put them in, and then as soon as that ground freezes, don't cut them back. Leave the top up for kind of insulation and protection, and then mound them with 4 to 5 inches of good heavy sand, and that'd be your best chance.
My potentilla popped up.
Tony, can you believe that?
I'm speechless.
Yeah.
What's the Latin name for that?
Potentilla.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
there
the Latin genus.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Nicely decided.
Well, it popped up, and I thought, I dug a big enough hole. Mm. Why did it do that? But it
I
was...
think we're digging one right now. I'm not sure.
He's no longer my favorite
guest.
That's
why he's the chief horticultural officer, Wendy. That's why.
We have so many more questions, but we don't have time. So how do people reach you?
Chalet Nursery, 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette.
Are you when you just walk around during the course of a day there at Chalet, are you bombarded with questions like these? I bet you are, aren't you?
These are absolutely common questions.
Yeah.
Things that I hear all
the time.
Nothing
shakes you. You know these things.
Oh, well.
ChaletNursery.com. Chalet Nursery, Tony Fulmer. You can find him. ChaletNursery.com. There's a lot of helpful information there as well. But go see him in Wilmette. Thank you.
Thanks, Always Tony.
My pleasure.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.